Hey, welcome to another episode of Subscription Radio. Today I have a very special guest, my friend Eric. Eric's the co-founder of Sweatpants Agency, digital marketing agency, and the only agency with two Inc. number one best, fastest growing companies in their categories. You know, and that's from scratch, right? So zero to fastest. You know, Eric spent over $300 million in advertising, has an enormous, I'd say, experience in what does and does not work. And if you follow any of his tweet or Twitter threads, he's been dropping a lot of, I'd say, really, really interesting and thought-provoking threads around marketing and experimentation and thinking, we'll call it thinking normal and thinking sort of out of the box. So really excited to have you on here, Eric. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to how I just described you.
No, I think that's lovely, man. And thank you very much for having me.
Hell yeah. And, you know, a lot of the brands you work with, since this is subscription radio, a lot of the brands you've worked with are subscription e-commerce brands. And so part of what I'm excited and interested to hear from you is in what sort of your day-to-day and speaking with a lot of these brands who are like have hit their stride with growth, what are you seeing working or not working now that was working 6 or 9 months ago? And so what are some of the common themes and ways that you've approached breaking through growth plateaus?
There's a lot of challenges, right? Like, I think everybody knows that. Actually, you know, there's no challenges. Super easy and no problem, right? But like, if we really look at it, like, there's a lot of challenges that hit e-commerce across the board right now, right? So there was an increase in shipping costs. There was an increase in input costs. Then we saw a bunch of challenges with paid media, right? So the challenges in paid media were multifold. First of all, there was this point kind of after COVID where some of the demand went down, but the prices of inventory was still way up, right? So all these big brands were still competing there. And what we've seen actually in this first quarter of this year is actually we've seen the CPMs go down. Has the intent gone up? I'm not sure that I can really say that. I think it's basically flat. It's still a little tenuous, if you will. But people are winning right now because the inventory cost is low. So I think what we're seeing is we're seeing a bunch of like big brands, like the Amazons, the Walmarts, all these people of the world actually pulling out of paid media. And it's opening up a lot of opportunity on the paid media side. The other thing on the paid media side that's been like a big challenge for people is finding a source of truth, right? So post iOS, a bunch of people had to go and like figure out what their data was. Like Facebook mostly underreported afterwards, sometimes it overreported, but no matter what, it was a complete lie, right? So like we have this example where we were running UTM last click and we saw transactions in Google Analytics, and then we saw the transactions inside of Facebook. Same number of transactions, but when we looked at the ads and the ad sets, they were completely different. So it's super important these days to find a source of truth. The way that we find sources of truth most of the time is we're using things like North Beam, Triple Whale, or UTM Last Click. In terms of subscription, you know, there's challenges in the subscription industry too. I think we've seen quite a few brands in subscription recently run into some trouble. So I think Birchbox has fallen into that category. But I think it's very much about the types of category and the way that you treat subscription. One of the things that I think a lot of people get mistaken about, and this is true with D2C, it's true with subscription, is they actually think it's a business, right? It's a business model. And the truth is, it's not a business model. D2C is a channel and subscription is a revenue model, right? It's a terrific revenue model. It's a revenue model that, you know, makes me very happy. You know, everybody likes waking up and knowing how much money they have at the beginning of the month, right? Everybody likes not having to fight for those customers again and again. But too many people looked at it as an actual business. So what we saw kind of in, you know, 2016 to 2018 is we saw a bunch of people like create these subscription boxes that were just stuff in a box. That is losing efficacy almost every day, right? What is winning in the subscription industry are a few things. Companies that have consumables and can add subscription to it. Companies that, as a subscription business, actually offer an experience. Or companies that, yes, they might be stuff in the box, but they figured out ways to tap into experience as well as community. The truth is, it's like people, most of the time when we survey people about like subscription, they're really interested. And essentially the experience, right? Like a lot of people, like even stuff like Geek Fuel, you know, people would want to sit down with like their daughter and pick out their favorite items and put on the little girl's shelf, put it on his shelf, and you pick these out and it's an experience. You know, boksu, you open up boksu box, which is these Japanese snacks. You know, first of all, the box is amazing. When you open it up, it actually like rips a little bit of air before you lift it off, almost like your iPhone. And they have this whole like guide that shows you all the different food. It shows you all the different people that are making it. It takes you on this trip. That's an experience. So we're seeing a lot of that change. And then the final thing, honestly, is that we are seeing an increase in churn, but there's ways that we're actually mitigating that and mitigating in a big way right now.
Awesome. No, thanks for the sort of the overview that of that. And I think it's funny because going back to some of the brands I know you've worked with, like BattleBox was another big one. So I guess one of the first questions is like, do you personally have any subscriptions?
I mean, of course, I think everybody right now has some type of subscription, whether it's streaming media or whatever it is. But yes,
I guess I'm thinking specifically e-commerce subscriptions.
Sure. I have a subscription.
Gotcha. Yeah, this is, you'd be surprised how many times I've had people on the show who, you know, they're growth marketers and like you ask them and no one has subscriptions. And I always ask my friends too. And it's fascinating to see who does and who doesn't. Ultimately, someone remembers like halfway through the conversation, oh, wait, I do have this random thing. But
what about you?
I had a meal subscription for a long time where they would actually like crunch the macros based off of fitness goals. And they would use Grubhub's API to deliver food that matches exactly how much I needed to consume based off of my latest like weekly weigh-in. So that was cool because it was basically like you would tell them your food preferences and then they would use that as sort of a basis of picking a meal and it would just show up wherever you were. And if you were like out of town, they would just give them your current address and they'd find something near there. So, and beyond that, these days, I've cut down on a lot of subscription. I actually had this experience a week ago where a family size of paper towels showed up from Amazon and I already had like six paper towels. And so I kid you not, I had no more shelf space. So I now have paper towels in my freezer. I'm like, I don't know how long this is going to take for me to go through them. But I would actually say that's one of like the biggest problems I've experienced with subscriptions. And in talking to people is like, I hate the idea of wasting money and just being surprised. And so I immediately canceled that subscription because I was like, now I have a year's worth of paper towels.
It's a problem. And candidly, like going back to the stuff in the box ones, that's one of the biggest challenges that they have, right? It's too much of something, right? Like there's all these, you know, sock and fashion ones. Like how many socks do you really need, right? And so like, yeah, I might want to go ahead and order a sock after I subscribe for a while and do that experience. But like, I'm not going to want, you know, a new like three pairs of unique socks every single month, right? So there's a bit of a challenge there. And I do think like some of the strategies, and I think you're actually doing some of these strategies right now, where you have the ability to subscribe, but also like you can change some of your intervals. You can go ahead and actually order ahead. It actually increases LTV. It's not just that it's a good customer experience. It actually increases LTV, right? Because that's what the consumer ultimately wants.
Yeah. And I'll say like part of what we've pushed with brands is creating like a membership experience. Like I've always, there's a great book on this. And so none of this is unique to me. These are all things I've picked up from people who've been studying subscriptions and membership. Like there's a book called The Membership Economy that was really eye-opening by someone named Robin, I think, Waxman. That informed a lot of the way I even look at the category is like, as you said, subscriptions are a revenue model. And if you were to break down, like, what is it that people want? They don't want a subscription per se. What they want is the product when they need it. It's like, you want one less thing to worry about. Like, I don't want to be thinking about, like, if I could have it on autopilot and have it show up magically when I need it, that sounds freaking awesome. But like with consumable products where like the consumption habits vary and like maybe you're out of town, like it doesn't happen. And so I think, yeah, the membership piece to me, like finding ways like Jot, one of the brands we work with, they have it where they do like small batches of artisanal coffee that they just do it once and it'll last for like a month. And then, but you have to be a subscriber in order to even buy it. So they've made some sort of exclusivity into like their catalog. But yeah, that's the closest, certainly within like the D2C world that I've seen around consumables. I don't know. What are some good examples you've seen around how to make it into more of an experience? Like, I mean, you gave an example earlier, I guess, around like the unboxing.
Yeah. I mean, the unboxing is definitely an example. I mean, the experience, like if you look at Hunt and Killer has always been an experience, right? So Hunt and Killer, for anybody that doesn't know, is a murder mystery subscription box. I might have grew a little fast.
I was like, well, that's one of your number one ink fastest.
Right. And so like with Hunt and Killer, I mean, it's this experience where you can sit down with your friends, you're trying to figure out these clues, you're doing these ciphers, and it's an experience that could be a date night. It's an experience that could be a game night, right? Like those things are actual experiences. You know, one of our mutual friends, a guy that used to be CTO, or I think he was chief product officer over at Hunt and Killer. He runs a company called Completing the Puzzle, right? And so it's these rentable puzzles and you don't have to fill up the closet space. You're getting something unique. And it's a surprise every time you get it. But like you're sitting down, you're playing with the family. That's the type of stuff that people really want to pay for a lot of times is the experience. Now, on the consumable side, I think you're 100% right. Like, I want it when I need it. But I will tell you, like, one of the things that I really liked about SuperGut is when I signed up, they kept sending me kind of these SMS each day. Did you take your SuperGut today? Did you take your SuperGut today? So it's almost like they're trying to get you on an adherence schedule. And you know, if you think about things like Atomic Habits, or you just think about like doing small things and getting in the habit of it, I mean, trying to train that behavior up front, I don't know what it's done to the retention compared to the actual numbers, but like, I got to tell you, I thought it was pretty freaking cool.
Right. You're just saying anecdotally from like an experience perspective, you're like, I see how this could work. Yeah. That was actually, even when I've thought about ways to try to more predictably, how could you predict when someone needs more product? One way would be checking in with them and be like, how much do you have left? Or asking them on some sort of, I mean, like coffee would be, I mean, with something where you can take it every day or like a supplement, it's easy because like, oh yeah, did you take it today? Whereas if you're asking about coffee, it's like, it becomes a bit of a, how do you make it relevant and not annoying? In my mind, it's largely comes down to the communication style. But that to me is like one way where it's like, it doesn't take AI to figure this out. It can be like just design, like designing a good experience where it's, where the person doesn't have to think too hard. And then you can kind of get a sense of inventory is getting low. Now we should ship them more or ask them if they're ready. How would you approach that? And am I crazy? Like with a consumable product, we're not one where you take every day. I think if the primary reason that most people cancel a subscription is because they get unwanted product, it would seem to me that being able to forecast when each person needs more would be possibly one of the best, like a great retention mechanism.
I think there's a lot of things that could be done. And I think actually a decent amount of it's done up front. I think the second half of that's probably more like, you know, what you guys do with your subscription solution. But like candidly, up front, you can give recommendations, right? So like, here's the intervals based on your consumption, right? So like, are you a, do you drink a pot of coffee a day? Do you drink a cup of coffee a day? Do you drink, you know, just a couple of cups a week, right? And here's our recommended intervals. In addition to that, I think expectation setting up front and indoctrination can actually increase consumption and also help. I don't know the exact way that I would do it in coffee, but like, you know, you can do all the comparisons. You talk about how faster it is, how many minutes you save, you know, how this is cleaner coffee and all these things, how, you know, you're going to feel better caffeinated high after like, you know, the first cup. And when you continue to do this, you're going to be, you know, by month two, you've saved over X number of minutes in preparing it. By month three, you've saved X number of minutes preparing it. And so like, with SuperGut, when they sent it to me, they did a lot of future pacing, right? So like with the future pacing, they were like, oh, well, in week one, you're going to notice these things. In week two, you're going to notice this. By like month two, you're going to be in this situation where you have less bloating and your digestive system's better and all this other stuff. And I think the future pacing and indoctrination is kind of probably overlooked by a lot of people because they're like, hey, they just ordered some product. Let me send it to them. And the truth is, no. Like if I hire a new employee, I'm putting them in through some onboarding and, you know, they're going to know our core values. They're going to know what our expectations are. They're going to know everything, but we don't really do any of that with product, right? Like too many people just send it out. That's not enough. Like if you want people to come back, give them a reason to come back because you set the expectation early.
Yeah. Interesting. That makes sense. What are some of those, we'll call it going back to churn reduction, there were a couple of things you were referencing earlier, and it might be what you and I were talking about before the show, is like, what are some of these strategies that you've implemented, given that churn has increased, that we contributed that to the economy, whatnot? Like, what are some of the things that you've seen work?
Yeah, I mean, to address the churn real quickly, I see it going up, but it's also hard to tell, because every time after the holidays, you're going to see an increase in churn because people are just more impulsive. There's going to be gifts. There's going to be all these things that are going to cause people to churn at a higher rate than your normal cohorts, right? But the thing that we've seen kind of decrease churn more than anything else, right? Like, obviously, there's things on involuntary churn and dunning and all these other things that many people know. But what we've been doing is a lot of in-cycle upselling, right? So what that means is, let's say that you get a box from Honeykiller, right? And you make it all the way through that murder mystery. Well, let's say like day 7, day 14 after you get it, somewhere around there, you know, we hit you up and we say, hey, you know what? So excited that you got the murder mystery. If you're like most people, you already made it through it and you can't wait for your next box. Good news. Click here now to get your next one expedited, right? Literally, they go to a page, they confirm all their information. Next thing you can do is you can say, upgrade to an annual, and it's just like getting this next box for free, right? So the discount on that's pretty nominal. It's 1/12, you know, obviously. And you got somebody that's already saying, hey, I really want this, and I already committed to this, and they're doing that. We have another beauty brand, very clean beauty type brand. And what we're doing is we're actually sending a message about, hey, upgrade to like a 6-month and you save 10% on your subscription and you get a free bottle of this thing, right? And the scary thing about this, by the way, and I'm hoping this is on your roadmap if it's not already there, but like, we do a lot of this manually in the back end, right? But it's worth it, because once we get somebody to a higher cohort, we're going to have higher retention with them overall, right? And that's going to be most subscriptions. Don't get me wrong. Like, there's some subscriptions that, you know, prepaid plans, you might consider doing more towards your cliffs rather than doing it early on, right? So like, we have some subscription brands that are more necessities, and those necessities, they might go to an average cohort of like 16, 17 months on average, right? In those cases, you might not send these types of offers until you start to see the first cliff, beyond the first month or two cliff, right? Because you're going to get churn there. But like, there's so many opportunities to get these people on these prepaid plans. And I can tell you, almost everybody that we deployed this on, and mostly this being deployed through email strategy, everybody that we're deploying this on has seen their lowest churn months since. And by the way, you can do this in a freaking insert. Right? Like, your one-time purchasers, sell them a subscription. Your monthly subscriptions, sell them something longer term. Throw in an insert. What does it cost you? You know, 40 cents? Maybe if you're at a really bad fulfillment facility, maybe they'll charge you a buck or two on top of that. But like, it doesn't cost much. Hit them while they're hot, right? Like, your emotion's high when you buy. If the experience is good, your emotion will be high then. But people get bored after 2-3 months, right? So don't let that set in. Hit them while they're high emotion.
And I'm curious, so when you're doing the upgrade, is it that you're, so they've already gotten their first month. So are you extending it another 12 months, or are you extending it 11 months?
So in most of these cases, it'd be a full like 12 month, right? So what it'd be is, let's say that you got your first month and then you want to go ahead and get your next box for free, you get that next one for free, but then there's 11 payments essentially after that, right? Or 11 months that are paid for. That's the way that we're doing it. So for the most part, you know, cancel the monthly, move up to a prepaid plan. And I'm telling you, man, this works beautifully. And by the way, cash flow wise, come on. Who doesn't like this from cash flow?
And are you doing this both through email as well as SMS? And are you leaning on one channel versus the other more?
So we are mostly doing it through email right now, but I'm glad that you said that, because I'm about to go tell our team to go test some SMS.
Well, please report back on how that's going.
I will.
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I think, you know, I think the challenge with a lot of, at least what I've seen with some of these workflows, because like, functionally, we do support what you just talked about, and we've implemented it at the post-purchase experience level. Like right after someone has purchased. I love your suggestion
By the way, that's amazing. I can't believe a lot of platforms out there don't.
Yeah.
So you guys are definitely leading edge here.
Well, and you know, I think you and I first met when I was doing Carthook. And so like everything around like post-purchase and like cross-selling and upselling, you know, just observing how brands have done it. And like most of the D2C operators who I talk to who, for lack, I hate saying killing it, but killing it, you know, they really rely on upsells and whatnot to try to get basically to cover their cost of acquisition, ideally the day that they acquire a customer, right? Like this goes back to the whole value of being able to get the cash up front is that then you can reinvest that into growth. So where I was going with this was that part of the challenge is making it turnkey. Because let's say someone's using Klaviyo as their ESP, you know, we don't want to replace Klaviyo. And we've been very clear and like, all right, we'll integrate with whatever like ESP you're using. And on Shopify, it's typically Klaviyo. But then we have to like manually, we can't just like dynamically insert templates or flows into your account. I wish we could, because then instead what happens is we have to go and replicate like the upcoming order reminder flow. You know, the alternative is for us to send that stuff automatically ourselves. But, you know, that's not the business till now that we haven't wanted to go into that because we're like, you're already using, you want to be able to do split testing, you want to do A-B testing. Unless we're going to build out a full out Klaviyo replacement, you're not going to be able to do any of that stuff. So we're better off solving the problem for you in Klaviyo. But I think the question comes down to is how do you make it as easy as possible for a brand to take even that strategy and then implement it themselves without it being like, because whenever you require someone to do work, it's, you know, you're gonna have a lot of friction. I wish we could do it out of the box and not just say, hey, copy this and do this and this.
I'm happy to jam with you about it later, but I honestly think that it could be fairly simple, right? Like the main thing that's the challenge here is like, we have to almost make it a customer support ticket, or we need to go ahead and have people reply to it. Then somebody needs to manually do something in the back end. Then they reply, that happens. The truth is that imagine that you had the opportunity to essentially come up with unique URLs for each one of these people, right? And these unique URLs basically land on their upgrade plan, right? Their pages are already kind of pre-designed based, they're templatized. I mean, that'd be very doable, right? You're basically doing it on some session data. You could pass those variables probably to Klaviyo, or you could go ahead and do like a transactional email, or even better yet, take that data, be able to export it, upload that data to whatever you're doing in terms of insert and postcard, make it a QR code. QR code, I scan it, I immediately get, you know, X percent off my next thing, I upgrade the plan, it's all said and done. So I think there's a way to do it. And I think there's a slick way to do it. And candidly, I have a feeling you're going to be the first.
Yeah. Well, let's figure this out, man.
Yeah.
Because I think anything, because again, ultimately what I've looked at is, and what we look at is like, what are the things that people are currently doing that work, but are tedious? And then how can you add some fuel and then build upon it? So, but no, that's a great, I don't want to call it a trick. I'll call it a strategy or tactic that I haven't seen brands do.
I'm fine with being called a trick. It's not the first time.
Yeah. Anything else like that that you've seen just really help with around retention or even converting from a one-time to a subscription?
I mean, honestly, some of the stuff that you were talking about kind of early on, like doing post-purchase, having some of those plans kind of even like pre-purchase, you're getting people in longer cohorts. The other retention problems, they fall into different categories, right? So you have the retention problem of involuntary churn, right? Which you have to go, like, let's say you're on Braintree. You have to go to Braintree and request them to turn on their auto updater. And for anybody that doesn't know what that is, right? Like Stripe has this, I think, as normal functionality. It might add a fee to it, but they have the ability to go ahead and get new expiration dates. They have the ability to push something that, because they don't hold the CVC, push something that actually gets the bank to approve it without that. And they can do this, but you have to request it manually. And like, I would love to see a scenario where that doesn't happen. The way that you rebuild customers to try to do that involuntary churn, it's significant. Like involuntary churn is a big problem. Like it isn't always that a customer doesn't want to be a part of this. It is their credit card literally won't work, even if it's a functional credit card, right? And they signed up for this. So that's one issue that I think almost everybody has to think about in subscription. They have to think about how am I mitigating my involuntary churn? The second part of that, obviously, you know, we talked a little bit about the prepaid plans. You know, the truth is like a lot of these products, they essentially have a window, right? And by window, I mean, let's say I launch a product and it's shitty, right? That product category or that core product might only start out at like, say, like 6 month retention. If I really, really optimize it without prepaid plans, I might get it to 10, right? There's no way I'm getting it past 10. There is a place where the market just says, no, this is exactly where you're optimized, right? So there's things that you can do, like the indoctrination and different things that actually increase retention. I mean, even stupid stuff like little surprises in each box can actually make a difference too. You know, increasing people's consumption. I believe Patrick Campbell, the guy over at ProfitWell, he has great data on actually add-ons actually increase retention. So there's great data there. And then there are things like cancellation flow, right? So there's actually a couple things, especially in the portal, that are done by some of your competitors very poorly. So like, you know, just simple stuff. Like if I'm ordering a necessity, right? I should be able to go in there and switch the date. In certain cases, like certain platforms, they allow skips, right? Now skips can also be a problem because you have something called ghost churn, but you know, the ability to have flexibility on your subscription can actually increase retention and lifetime value overall. The other thing too is cancellation flow. I'm not going to lie. Cancellation flow isn't going to be a massive game changer, but you can literally recover somewhere between about 5 to 15% of your people, right? That are about to cancel. It's very hard to stop those people once they commit it. But like you look at Hulu, you look at all these guys, they have downgrade sales. They have other things that they can do. You know, hey, with your next box, I'm going to offer you, you know, we're going to give you a bonus, right? If you stick with us, we're going to give you a bonus in your next box, right? There are things that you can go ahead and do to try to retain that customer. But, you know, it's a lot of those things are just like turning knobs. And I'm not even going to lie. I think at some point, because of how efficient everybody's becoming, that is going to become the cost of the mission, right? But you need to do all those things anyways. The prepaid plans, having flexibility in your subscription, that's where these subscriptions are winning.
That just got me thinking around some of the brands that like an operators I've spoken with, you know, a lot of them try to make cancellation really difficult. You know, I sometimes feel like I'm a therapist between the consumer and the operator, because it's kind of oftentimes evidence is anecdotal, but you were talking like flexibility around a subscription. You know, that flexibility scares a lot of operators because they're like, I want to optimize for people going into a subscription and I want to make it difficult for the consumer to get out. And then they're just looking at math. And then you're trying to sort of say, well, you know, I can generally speak anecdotally, but just even as a consumer, this goes back to just thinking about the world, I guess, as a consumer, you're like, I don't want to work with brands that make it super difficult like that. You've lost goodwill. And I don't know if you have tested any of this, or if you have actual like numbers to back up that flexibility improves retention.
I'll tell you this. And then this is more anecdotal, but based on a ton of experience, right?
Yeah.
I've been that person before who was scared of, you know, losing a subscriber by even sending an email, right? Or somebody that wants to make it difficult. Here's the deal. A lot of brands that don't focus on doing well by their customers, they have a short shelf life. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to be honest, because ultimately we see brands that don't focus on their customer. And sure, they might get millions of customers, but eventually it's going to get so hard to get more people. Whereas we mm-hmm. have certain brands in our portfolio that like they have like 30 some percent of their customers coming from referral, right? This one brand, I'm not going to mention them because it's so good, but like they have an NPS that's higher than Tesla. Before, you know, when everybody still liked Tesla, everybody. But like, you know, they have an NPS that's that high. And so like there's this massive referral rate, and that creates an engine, right? Whereas like if you are in this scenario where like my goal is to extract as much value from my customer as possible, somebody else is going to eat your lunch. That customer is going to go to somebody else, right? Because lifetime value matters, referrals matter. These are the things that keep you alive. Otherwise, you end up in this hamster wheel, basically chasing your churn with your new acquisition. And I remember my old business partner, he's the co-founder of BigCommerce. And like, he used to joke about Facebook being heroin, right? Like, initially you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. Like, you know, this thing just giving, you know, I put money in and it pumps money out. And at some point, heroin kills you. Because the truth is like, ultimately, and by the way, like, a lot of these brands, like when they first start on like Facebook, they have probably like a 2-year honeymoon period where like acquisition cost is low, but most of those grow over time and they don't really think about that. And by the way, you look at the public comps, this is very true, right? Unless you do some repositioning, unless you launch new products, unless you figure out new LTV, the reason that happens most of the time, in my opinion, is because competitors come into the market. The more competitors come into the market, the harder it is to acquire a customer, right? Like if you were in the keto food space and you clicked on an ad, you'd see 5 other competitors there, right? Those guys were making a lot more money when there was only 1 or 2, right? And so like, that is the problem that happens to these brands. So like, yes, you can go ahead and make it super difficult for your customers to go ahead and cancel. But I will tell you, that is a good 2-3, maybe 4-year plan. It's not a long-term plan. It's going to kill your business. And by the way, like, I'm not even going to get into the legality of it, but I'll also say like, sometimes I do take risks, especially up front. Like I'm less about like, you know, keeping things fully buttoned up and testing up front, but like, California is getting very serious about this stuff. And I can tell you personally, brands that I know that have had fork out money in California for not making it easy, for not allowing the same method of sign up and ease in the cancellation. Those things happen. And by the way, like that's money that you got to pay and it's not tax deductible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, that's one of the, again, anecdotally, it's as more and more brands are offering subscriptions as a revenue model. We'll just call it a revenue model from now on. Part of the, it's also much easier for people to cancel, or even maybe the risk of someone canceling's even greater, because once someone cancels, there's like 5 different alternatives for them to subscribe to, and not necessarily even in your category. But let's assume most people, like the last stat I saw was the average household in the U.S. spends about $200 a month in subscriptions. For e-commerce subscriptions, the average order value is like $40. You know, that's maybe 3 things realistically. Because I think 200 sounds like on the high end to me. But my guess is most people will subscribe to maybe 3 things at most. And then they'll like swap out things.
200 sounds low to me by subscribing to a bunch of SaaS. But yeah.
Right. Well, again, I'm talking about physical e-com. Yeah, I have like a million SaaS subscriptions.
Hey, this is a cool new toy. Let me sign up.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You're like, this will make me 10 times faster. No. And I love hiring software to do the job if it cuts out needless work. But I think, yeah, as the market for subscription has grown, it's also kind of cannibalized itself, because when everyone's offering a subscription, well, if everyone's asking me to subscribe, I'm going to be very selective, or I'm going to default to no, which I guess then the job becomes, as you were sort of saying, like do a good job of whether or not someone starts out as a subscriber or not, make it easy for them in flow or in cycle to upgrade.
And by the way, again, back to the revenue model, like you don't have to necessarily force this revenue model. There are good reasons to do it in certain occasions. I think it's one of the easiest ways to cash flow a business, right? But like, you know, we've seen brands where like, yes, the core business on D2C is subscription, but like they might go ahead and create a one-off product for Amazon. They might create a one-off product for Target. That strategy works too. Don't just think about revenue subscription as a business. Think of it as a revenue model.
One thing you mentioned earlier that I was thinking about, which was like talking about people skip, which I think you referred to as a ghost cancellation. We've actually spoken to a lot of brands and I've asked them like, do you know people who consistently skip? And are you segmenting those people? And then finding out why are they consistently skipping, but also making sure that you're recognizing they're not an active subscriber or they're a churn risk and treating them differently or targeting them and offering them a free gift when they like renew or doing customer development and just trying to understand why. Because I'm not familiar with any other platform. Like I think even, you know, Recharge will tell you in aggregate how many people are skipping, but you can't actually go in and isolate in a meaningful way. Here are the people who've skipped at least X number of times. And then segment them.
Are you trying to say that they have bad analytics?
Can neither confirm nor deny. But it is one of the, I was just thinking, it's like, it is one of those things where this idea of being able to provide more segmentation, I think as a marketer, like, are there certain things that you are like, why can't I just get this data out of the platform about my customer? Because you would treat those customers differently. And I think skipping is one example, you know, pausing would be another one. I don't know if there's any other behaviors that you look at where, like, if someone's doing this, I would actually want to be able to sort of segment them or communicate with them differently.
On that granular level, like the nuts and bolts, I don't touch it as much anymore. But what I will tell you is I do remember some of the stuff missing, and I know the stuff that I still get manual reports for, right? So, like, some of the stuff, I mean, you're right about the skips and the ghost churn. There's nothing there. I think there's a lot of opportunity when you can slice data, right? And I don't recall a lot of these big platforms having good slice data. And what I mean by that is, like, I love to see what the retention is based on a coupon code. I'd love to see retention based on a certain month that somebody was acquired, right? And I'd like to be able to plot those against each other. I'd like to be able to see what the retention is when somebody uses a gift card. Heck, I even want to see what the retention looks like on the type of payment method, right? Like, not really, but, like, you know, it'd be cool to see. Like, you know, and Stripe has Stripe Radar, and you can type in some of that data and it'll pump it out. But you got to know, like, somewhat how to write SQL type syntax. But, like, that's the type of data that I think is really valuable, right? So, like, when you're doing planning, you're doing predictions, like, almost all subscription businesses have higher churn after November or December, especially if they have a peak, right? That's something that'd be good to know from a forecasting standpoint. A lot of subscriptions, they over discount. You need to look at what your incremental losses compared to your incremental gain when you do that, right? So, like, again, going back to, like, Patrick Campbell and some of the data that he's pulled across subscriptions, I believe he identified around, like, 30% discount. You typically start to see a much higher amount of churn, sometimes double the churn in the first 2 months, right? When that happens, your difference between CAC to LTV might not be as good as what you think it is, right? So, like, you want to find a good balance there. I mean, for the most part, we found, like, a new acquisition, 25% off works pretty well. But, like, there's other things too that you can do as offers, right? I'm going to give away this free thing on top of it, this free thing. There are things that you can do to incentivize that offer that might not have that same level of churn. But that's the main thing. I think, you know, this is a game of lifetime value. It is a game of how much does it cost me to acquire a customer? How much money am I making on this customer overall? And in order to do that, you need to focus on the churn. And the only way to figure out how to improve that a lot of times is being able to break this down individually. Also, you know, we've done some crazy stuff where, like, I don't recall how we necessarily did the holdout, but, like, we might send, like, something different in, like, a box compared to other people, and we track them too, right?
Track. Yeah.
And so, like, hey, I'm going to add an insert to this one, and I want to see how this insert impacts this person over the next 3 months, right? By the way, you can go longer, but candidly, we like to make decisions as quickly as possible, right? But you can see that data. And so that's the main thing. I just don't think the current platforms, a lot of them out there, have really good ability to slice that data. And that's what's important. I mean, I'll take a bigger lifetime value any day of the week.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think some of the slicing you're talking about, I'd have to take a look to see if Peel supports that. Because I'd say of the sophistication of like analytics tools, I know Peel does a fair amount of, you can plot like first order SKU or first order product, and you can look at retention, I believe, and compare retention and LTV based off of the first product that they purchased. But no, I'm curious. I don't know, have you used Peel at all yourself?
No, I know some people that have. I mean, I know in Triple Whale, like, you can see by product name, but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. I want to see by month. I want to be able to do some tests. I want to be able to see, you know, was it a gift card, discount, things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. All that makes sense. I don't know if there is anything else. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think one of the questions I like to ask is, like, what's your big ask for everyone listening? Like, is there one thing that would transform your life or your business that if you had an opportunity just to put it out in front of in the ether, this is your opportunity.
I don't know about transforming my life, but I would really appreciate anybody's out there in D2C and you're looking to upgrade your agency, come check us out at sweatpantsagency.com. we're okay. You know, we're not terrible. We do paid media. We do email marketing. We're pretty good at what we do. And then also, I like to shitpost and talk trash on Twitter. So come follow me at the Eric Carlson. And there's no .com after that.
Sorry, we'll put a link in the show notes to both your agency as well as your Twitter. And as I was saying, like I would say Eric's one of the more amusing people on Twitter. And the threads that you're sharing, even around like not even about e-commerce. I think one that I was reading about the other day was you were talking about like things that parents don't teach kids, or that we as a culture don't teach kids. So I'd say there's a lot of interesting nuggets and thoughtfulness there. So I appreciate that in between the shitposts.
Thank you.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Ben.